There are more tigers in America than there are in the wild, and some are pets in unlicensed zoos and back garden cages. And the Netflix series Tiger King, Murder, Mayhem and Madness shines a light on the bizarre world of big cat collecting. Now, the series features Joe Exotic, a collector convicted in a murder-for-hire plot to kill an animal rights activist trying to shut him down. And wildlife journalist Rachel Neuer, in her podcast Cat People, tells the stories of lions living in backyards, tigers running down the motorway in Ohio, and the murder plot that brought down the Tiger King. And Rachel Neuer joins me now. Hi, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, tell me, for anyone who hasn't seen Tiger King, can you give us a synopsis of who exactly Joe Exotic is and what he's convicted of doing?
So Joe Exotic is this kind of larger-than-life, too-crazy-to-even-be-true character. He's a self-described gun-toting, gay Oklahoma zookeeper. And he was previously one of the largest owners of exotic big cats in the U.S. and one of the most prolific breeders of those cats. He caught the eye of the federal government a few years ago because he had put out a murder-for-hire hit on his arch tiger nemesis, a woman named Carol Baskin. She's from Florida. And Carol Baskin had made it her mission to shut down people like Joe Exotic, the people in this country who are really driving this epidemic of big cats in backyards, at roadside zoos, at gas stations, etc. So yeah, Carol kind of crossed Joe, not finding any other way to get out from beneath her, decided to try to have her killed. And luckily, he's now in federal prison.
I have to admit, too, I finished the series at the weekend, and the news this morning, I think, was saying that there's one more episode to come out, which I look forward to watching. It is quite bizarre. And the guy himself, it seemed as though he started out as a genuine animal lover, but then it got way out of hand. Tell me about the sorts of animals he had in his collection.
So whether Joe is a true animal lover or not is actually a bit contentious. I spoke with Joe's older brother, Yari, and his brother actually said that even when they were kids, Joe would, in fact, torture animals. He would shoot these types of antelope they have in Montana and out in the West. He would stick pins into birds to pretend to be doctor. So, yeah, take that claim with a grain of salt that Joe is indeed an animal lover. Joe, of course, tells it differently. Joe told me that, yeah, he was one of these kids who loved critters, loved being outdoors. And as far as the zoo, it got started, I think, more as a money-making venture. Joe first owned a pet shop, and after his brother was killed in a car accident, the family got some settlement money from the insurance company, and Joe decided to start this zoo in his brother's memory.
And what did he have exactly in the zoo? I mean, how many big cats did he have?
So it started really small. It started, I think, with like a cougar and a bear or something being dropped off because, you know, people get these big animals, whether it's a big cat or otherwise, and they quickly grow up and they become expenses. They become liabilities. They become extremely dangerous. So people don't want them once they're not a cute little baby. So from a very small, humble beginning, the zoo quickly began to grow. You know, Joe got a call about some tigers in a backyard a few miles away in Oklahoma and drove in and got them. And I think those were his first breeding pair. And it grew and grew. He claims that eventually he had over 200 tigers at the zoo.
Now, you actually went to the zoo, didn't you? What was that experience like?
I did. I went there after Joe's arrest. I swung by the day after he was convicted or that morning. It was, a really depressing situation. The new owners who are also featured in the documentary, Lauren and Jeff Lowe, Lauren came out and said something like, oh, well, we just want you to know that this isn't going to be like this. We're going to make it a lot nicer. Well, as far as I can tell from other images people have taken, it has not gotten nicer. It's actually gotten worse. You're talking animals in really small, squalid cages, feces everywhere, animals that are pacing back and forth in this sort of typical cage insanity that you see with animals that don't have proper stimulation. You know, too many cats in a single cage. And keep in mind, you know, these are 400, 500 pound predators that have huge ranges in the wild. And they're not animals that they're solitary animals. Tigers don't want to be cooped up in a tiny cage with other tigers.
It's funny because, you know, watching the series, you certainly don't get that impression, or he, Joe Exotic himself, doesn't put that impression out. It's like, you know, they love being around people. They, you know, they have such a wonderful life, and he's really saving them. But that's definitely not the case, is it? Tell me about the fact that he... people and hundreds of people are going there and paying money to get their photos taken with the cubs. But the process of you know, having your photo taken and breeding these cubs for these photos is, it's appalling, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. Experts call it the breed and dump cycle. This is how people like Joe Exotic make their money. You know, they charge, I think I paid $80 for 12 minutes with a cub. And, you know, I wasn't doing that to give them my money, just to see what it was like and get some audio myself. Cubs grow up very quickly. There's a very brief window that they can be handled safely, you know, maybe 2 to 6 weeks old. They have a terrible life. You know, they're pulled from their mothers at birth. They're handled all day. Sometimes they're drugged into submission, or just, you know, they become exhausted. They often have diarrhea. They have ringworm. People have gotten ringworms from handling these cubs. It's just a miserable situation for them. But once they reach that expiration window, when they become too big, they can't be handled anymore. And I experienced this firsthand. My producer and I were with this cub, and I think she was about 6 weeks old. I can't remember exactly, but you know, she was extremely rambunctious. She was jumping on us. And at one point she actually landed a jump on my producer and bit his arm, and through his sleeve left a really big red welt. And you know, it really hurt him. So you can just imagine if that happened to a kid.
Absolutely.
So once these cubs are, once these cubs are too big, there's nothing to really be done with them anymore. You can't just keep every cub and, you know, use it as a breeder. Tigers can cost up to $10,000 a year to feed. So you need to push these cubs off on other people. That can be selling the cubs, which is what is really driving this this industry in the U.S. and this phenomenon we have of too many big cats in private hands. You know, others allegedly just kill the cubs. You know, they gas them or things like that, which is illegal. But again, you have to prove it. And you have to have people who have the time and resources to go about proving it and to prosecute them. So, yeah, the cub petting, the playtimes, the selfies are really at the heart of this problem.
Well, in the documentary, it did show that when they did a search of Joe Exotic's property, they found a lot of tiger remains, animal remains. Yep. So he was sent to jail, and he has been prosecuted on a number of charges. Mm-hmm. What were those charges?
So he actually was prosecuted on 17 different federal wildlife charges. Among them, yes, was the illegal killing of 5 tigers. Tigers are endangered species. You can't just kill them here. And yeah, in trial, it came out that Joe needed to make space for some more tigers that were coming in to be boarded for the season. And, you know, the person who was boarding them was going to pay for them. So he needed to get rid of some of his tigers so he could make money off these new tigers. And he just walked up to those tigers and straight up shot them in the head. And, you know, Joe was prosecuted for those 5 tigers, but I spoke with, for example, John Finley, Joe's ex-boyfriend / ex-partner in the zoo. And John said, yeah, sure, Joe would sometimes kill cubs.
Oh, it's just, yeah, for someone who claimed to be an animal lover, you know, he was anything but, really.
It's a facade.
Yeah, what was your opinion of the series?
I really think the series was highly entertaining. You know, Joe is nothing if not entertaining, but I do think it missed the mark in terms of delivering a strong conservation message and making it clear what the problems are, that cub petting is not good, what is driving this industry, and how we can actually stop this. I've talked to sources of mine since the series came out, and one of them is a cop who has a real, I guess his finger's on the pulse of this industry. And he has already seen examples of people going out and purposefully like looking for a pet tiger or seeking tiger selfies, because now this idea has been planted in their head that this is cool and fun and something trendy to do. He referred to it as monkey see, monkey do. You know, you see it on TV and then you got to go out and do it for yourself.
Sadly, it is entertaining, I have to say, but what other messages do you think could have been brought out in the series?
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of things. I mean, the series casts or doubt on Joe's guilty verdict. It makes it kind of ambiguous. And, you know, poor Joe, he was set up by these, like, smarter criminals. Joe is not innocent. Joe belongs in prison exactly where he is. There's massive cries here in the U.S. For Joe's release from prison. You know, the hip-hop artist Cardi B put out some tweet about, you know, starting a GoFundMe page to raise money to get Joe out of jail. Things on hashtags on Twitter are trending, like Free Joe Exotic, which is really just not the right message that we should be promoting. Conversely, Carol Baskin, who really should have been the hero of this series, is painted to look like a villain. You know, they spent an entire episode on allegations that Carol murdered her husband in 1997. You know, that's no evidence has ever been produced showing that that is true at all.
She wasn't exactly totally innocent, though, in her initial beginning, was she?
Sure. So Carol started out one of these people who loved big cats, who loved cats in general, who wanted to do something to help them. And like so many people who get into big cat private ownership, she thought, hey, you know, these animals are endangered. So if I just buy more of them and breed them and make more of them, that's going to help their plight, which is, completely wrong from a conservation standpoint. Those animals have no conservation value whatsoever. Their genes are muddied. They could never be used for, you know, for breeding to put animals back in the wild, because they don't belong to any particular subspecies. Tigers in the wild are specific subspecies, not these generic American mutt tigers. And there's never been a case of a tiger from the U.S. then being used for conservation efforts in India or China or anywhere else. It's just not true. So as Carol began doing this, and this is in the 1990s, by the way, she began doing research and she began finding out, hey, you know, there is no conservation value of these cats. And as she's selling cubs, she also started experiencing that people would bring their cats back to her when they got grown up. And she was like, you know, wait a minute, like, what am I doing? These cats don't make good pets. This isn't helping conservation. So she wound up doing a complete 360 and shut down all breeding. Every cat on her property now is spayed or neutered. She does not sell cats. There's no touching the cats or taking selfies with the cats. When people surrender an animal to her, because she does run a sanctuary that's accredited, they have to sign a waiver saying that they will not only never own another big cat again, but if Carol so much as finds a photo of them with a big cat on the internet, she will, you know, legally take them to court or sue them or fine them or whatever. I mean, she's really, really serious about this ending of big cat ownership in the U.S. now. That's her mission completely.
And they are trying to get laws changed, aren't they, she and
exactly.
Her husband? What's that about?
Yeah, so they are at the forefront of a bill called the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And this is really important because in the U.S., there's no federal law governing big cat ownership. There's a few laws here and there about, you know, animal welfare or the Endangered Species Act and state lines and things, but the law is not very clear. There's tons of loopholes and it's not well enforced. So Carol and Howard, her husband, are pushing for a blanket ban of all public contact with any species of big cats. So that would put an end to all these cub petting sessions. And by putting an end to cub petting, then you're going to stop a lot of the breeding because people aren't going to be breeding these cats for profitable cub petting, if that makes sense. Yeah, and the act would also slowly phase out legal ownership of big cats. So, you know, people who still own their big cats can keep them throughout their lives until the animals die of old age. But it would phase out new ownership. So effectively, it would eventually ban all big cat ownership, which would really be a great thing.
I'm talking with wildlife journalist Rachel Neuer, whose podcast Cat People looks at the bizarre world of big cat collecting. What sort of person collects these tigers or big cats or has one? I mean, what kind of person are they?
So there's a few different people. First of all, there's people like Joe or Jeff Lowe, the guy who took over the zoo, who does this for money. You know, they're just business people out there looking to turn a quick buck with these cubs and sales. So there's that category of person. There are also the people like Carol Baskin formerly was, the people who just truly love these animals but have a sort of misplaced or misguided love. They're trying to help but in the wrong way by collecting the animal. And then there's people who do it as a way to show off, almost like someone would get a Ferrari for a midlife crisis. These people get a tiger, you know, to make themselves seem special, unique, powerful, to be, you know, the guy on the street with the tiger, to be the lion woman. So I think of these people in sort of three broad classes: moneymakers, misguided conservation people, and just people seeking a way to be special.
And this, Rachel, is not your first sojourn into the world of tiger breeders, is it? You spent 8 years investigating the illegal wildlife trade for your book Poached, and including you posed as a prostitute to get inside a tiger farm. And now, what was that about? That's very brave.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Yeah, I mean, I specialize in illegal wildlife trade as a journalist. And the thing is, I'd never really looked in my own backyard. So this whole Joe Exotic thing was a revelation for me. But previously, I've investigated tiger trafficking in China, Laos, Vietnam. In those countries, tigers are sought after for very different reasons. Traditional Chinese medicine draws upon tiger parts, everything from bones to penises. Tiger bone wine is this kind of macho drink brewed there that men like to drink. And as far as the prostitute thing, I was going to this sort of notorious den of criminal activity on the border of Laos, Thailand, and Myanmar called the King's Roman Special Economic Zone. And one of the investigators from a conservation group who had been there before had told me, you know, it's really not safe to go as a journalist or to go as yourself because people are going to follow you. There's all kinds of shady people there. You want to blend in. And the only way you can blend in as a white woman is to either go as a backpacker or a prostitute. And I just thought, hey, like a prostitute sounds a little more fun than a backpacker.
I was going to say, you didn't take the easy option, did you?
Well, I already had the clothes, so, you know.
So and what happened? I mean, what did you see there?
There was all sorts of shady things. There was child prostitution. There was just general, like, weirdness there. It actually turns out that the whole place is a laundering front for drug money. Coming in for narcotics made in Myanmar and then taken throughout the rest of Southeast Asia. But as far as the wildlife stuff goes, it was just blatant illegal wildlife for sale. There was a tiger farm on site, which is just picture like squalid rows of tiny jail-like cells full of, you know, two or three tigers each. And it's kind of like a shopping mall. You go there and pick out the tiger that you want to have slaughtered. You can eat that tiger's meat for dinner and then have the rest shipped back to your residence in China or Vietnam. And, you know, there were other animals for sale there, everything from bears to pangolins.
Oh, well, pangolins have certainly been in the news lately. Why do you think, you know, these myths about, you know, eating exotic animal parts, to improve virility persist? I mean, it's 2020.
Definitely. I just think, culture is strong. And when it comes to traditional Chinese medicine, we're talking about a millennia old system of belief and one that is now being strongly promoted by the Chinese government. People aren't just going to throw aside their culture overnight, but I am really heartened to see the ban of most animal eating in China. You know, I'm optimistic that maybe, just maybe, that's going to stick this time, unlike with the SARS ban that lasted a few months only. Vietnam seems to be tightening its legislation as well. And sources in China and Vietnam tell me, you know, they've never been more hardened and felt more optimistic that genuine change might be coming.
Now, you did recently write an article for the New York Times about this, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Just the obvious connection between illegal wildlife trade and zoonotic diseases like the one we're experiencing now as a pandemic. I mean, researchers have been saying this will happen for years and years. It's an inevitability when we go encroaching on forests, when we throw animals together of all different species and stress them out and slaughter them and in unhygienic conditions. I mean, it's simply a matter of time before something like this emerges. And unless we do change our ways, the way we relate to nature, the way we treat animals and natural systems, this will happen again. It absolutely will.
Do you know if demand for wildlife has dropped at all, or for tigers specifically?
I haven't heard about anything from tigers. I mean, I've heard from sources in Vietnam that people are really scared, you know. Like, nobody is ordering pangolins. Nobody's running out to have some kind of wild meat banquet. You know, nobody wants to be the source of the next disease or catch the next disease. And it also seems like the police are finally taking this a little more seriously. You know, wildlife trade was previously in Vietnam seen as something like, oh, what's the big deal? You know, officials from the government and the police are often ones who are buying wildlife themselves to eat or use as medicine, or they have sympathy on people doing it because they understand where they're coming from. However, this pandemic has really brought into focus the seriousness of wildlife. So, you know, maybe they won't be enforcing the laws because they suddenly, you know, love animals and feel so much sympathy for them, but hopefully they will be enforcing the laws because they clearly see the connection between human health, wildlife, and just the horrendous impact to the global economy and to people's lives at the moment.
Mm. And getting back to Joe Exotic, Rachel, do you know, have you spoken to him? Do you know if he feels any differently about how he treated his animals, or you know, what he's going to do when he gets out?
Yeah, Joe told me in interviews for my story that, you know, he felt bad about putting his animals in cages because now that he's in prison, he knows exactly how those animals felt, you know, just sitting behind bars, nothing to do, can't make decisions about, you know, when you eat, when you do anything. Whether he's genuine or not, yeah, who knows. I have not been in touch with Joe since the series came out. As far as I know, he's in quarantine right now for COVID. But I have heard just through various news stories with the producers slash directors of the series that, you know, Joe's ecstatic. He's finally gotten what he wants. He's an international celebrity and people love him.
And that's funny. That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, this guy that we probably would never have heard of, and very few of us possibly would have come across this series. But now that we're all at home and we're watching, having a lot of screen time, this guy is getting more notoriety than he probably would ever have expected.
Yeah, I mean, for Joe, it's worked out lovely. So, yeah, it's a shame.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for giving up your time today and for the work that you're doing. And good luck. We look forward to reading your book, Poached, and your podcast series. Now, what's the podcast series called again?
It is called Cat People, and you can find it with an accompanying feature story on Longreads.
Brilliant. Rachel Neuer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for your interest.
And the podcast can be found also on Spotify. And Rachel's book, Poached, Inside the Dark World of Wildlife Trafficking. It's a great read.